Hey there, it's Mike Tramp, and you're listening to White Line Fever, where rock and roll is still alive like it always has been, and it always will be.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to White Line Fever. My name's Steve Mascord. Special mention to our VIP patron, Annie Massey. And we have here one third of the group responsible for what I reckon is the album of the year. It's Damo Campbell from The Casanovas. Hey, Damo. How are you, mate?
Hey, Steve. Good, man. How are you?
Good, mate. Thanks for coming on. Now, I said the album of the year, and I might have to add a caveat there. It could be the album of the year so far because we just heard the first new music from AC/DC in about three, four years, but it was about 2016, wasn't it? So about 4 years. Pretty exciting stuff, mate. Are you excited about new Akadaka?
To be honest, mate, I didn't know anything about it. I actually saw a little neon lightning bolt the other day. Somebody posted and it was like, oh, okay, here we go. But that, what you played for me just before was the first I'd heard of it. But it sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Mate, you must be exciting time for you with Reptilian Overlord out and getting good reviews all around the world.
Yeah, it's exciting to get it out finally. It's been a bit of a wait for us. I mean, we recorded that 12 months ago now. So we're starting, to be completely honest with you, we're in COVID, we're in Victoria here, so we're completely locked down. So we've been doing a lot of writing of the next album. But it's been good to actually get, you know, something that we've been living with for a long time actually out into the world. And it's getting some good responses, which is good. Like, it justifies sort of, you know, the time it's taken between last album and this one. So that's pretty cool.
I guess you never know how other people are going to receive, new music. So have you heard other people's perspectives that has kind of surprised you or allowed you to look at it a different way?
I think probably the biggest thing for us is we went into this album with no sort of preconceived ideas. We knew what we wanted to do. We knew what the sounds we wanted. Some of the songs, they're pretty far and few and far between in terms of styles. And it's really just it's an album of the stuff that we like to do, what we believe, you know, good rock and roll should be. So when we start hearing some feedback coming in that it's like, you know, we're a little bit eclectic and we're a little bit different to a normal rock and roll band with sort of some of the songs, it's kind of cool. People are actually picking up on that.
I mean from a point of view of songwriting and consistency from sort of the first track to the last, you know, it ranks pretty well, you know, in your back catalog, doesn't it? I mean, have you looked at it from that perspective?
I guess we've moved on a lot, you know. I think early on, you know, the first album, we were sort of probably in the mold of being a sort of very AC/DC-esque type of band. And that was cool because we love AC/DC. But I think it's probably taken us, you know, a long time to probably break away from that. We weren't really trying to do that on purpose. It probably never was as hard of a mold as what people thought it was. Mm. I just think it was the first time that we had some clear space and some clear direction with some cool songs that we really wanted to get together. We had Mark Opitz on board, and that was exciting too. And we went to a pretty good studio where we just early on got some really good energy out of the track. So you always knew that that's a good start.
You had a lineup change since the last album with Brett coming in for Jaws. Can you tell us a little bit about that, how that came about? I noticed the website that you've got has still got the previous lineup, so I don't know whether you're locked out of your own website or whatever, but what was the story there with the lineup change?
On the website, that website's probably pretty old. I think we're probably locked out of our own website. But, look, you know, Jaws has been in the band for, he was there for, you know, 15-odd years, so... And we love Jaws dearly, you know, and we still do. But he actually changed a few things and moved off to Bali. So
All right.
Made life a bit harder to sort of write new songs and record and all that sort of thing. So yeah, we made a change. We had Brett Wolfenden, Wolfie, he joined us. He actually joined us after the recording. So we got Ricky Ray in there for to actually do the drum tracks. And Ricky's drumming's phenomenal, you know. Just a hard-hitting motherfucker. So it just gelled beautifully. And Wolfie's style is different again. You know, he's got a lot more chops and feel and all that sort of thing. And it's really a whole different thing again. So we're really excited to record with Wolfie and you know, probably get into the studio in the new year with him.
For the people listening on the audio podcast, we're going to play a song again soon. And I thought I should ask you about... Tommy was on one of the very first episodes of this show, and I actually went round to his place at St Kilda and recorded it. And, of course, my favourite song of the year so far from anyone, anywhere, is St Kilda's Fucked. So can you tell us a little bit about that song? I mean, did it all hit in one go? Was it a night out in St Kilda where you went, this is terrible, or... Did the inspiration for it just sort of grow over the years, you know?
Look, that's Tommy 100%, all of that. And that sort of hit my ears in one day. He just came out with that. So I think that's probably a culmination and build up of all of Tommy's experiences from when he grew up in St Kilda, you know, and probably in his early 20s, lived there for a bit and obviously experienced it as, you know, as we all did living in Melbourne, sort of going to the SB and the Prince and all that sort of thing. And it's just, an observation really of obviously what's happened in not just St Kilda, but a lot of places everywhere where it's changed. It's really it's not the place it used to be, but that it was a pretty funny take, I must say, where Tommy's come out with that.
Dragon Feature. Tommy from the Casanovas, and you're on White Line Fever.
Welcome back to White Line Fever, and I've got Nick from Goddard here again. G'day, Nick. I just we really have neglected to talk about the album, which is what he's here for. The Francis Rossi connection, the members of the Hooters. What's the story there? Obviously, these relationships, and by the way, the reason I mentioned that is because these people co-wrote songs on the album 13. Do these relationships go back to before you were in the band?
Not before I was in the band, but actually a few years ago, Leo and I did a tour called the Rock Meets Classic Tour.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And so we were on that, and actually Francis Rossi was there, and Eric Bazilian as well. So we were hanging out a lot with those guys, but basically started writing a song with Francis. Even I mean, we on our previous album, we had a song called Bye Bye Caroline that we did with Francis, just basically backstage, because we were touring for like a month together. So we were hanging out a lot backstage, and just with an acoustic guitar, just kind of, you know, wrote that song. And so kind of by the end of the tour, we'd had a song written and released it and everything. So that was kind of how we started with Francis. And then for this album, he had an idea for a song called Mysteria. And then we ended up, we just sort of finished that song up with him. I still speak with him quite often. I mean, he's a really, really, really nice guy. You know, we always have a great laugh with him. Super funny guy. And Eric, well, same thing. You know, I actually connected up with Eric after the Rock Meets Classic tour as well. I went up to Sweden, did some unrelated Gotthard stuff, just songwriting with him, wrote a few songs with him, and we became pretty good friends as well, and thought it would be a good idea to get him down to Switzerland to spend a few days and see what we can come up with as well, you know. So we wrote a couple of, well, wrote a song called Bad News with him. Mm. And then he had this. He actually had a song that he'd recorded himself and played to his wife, well, his then girlfriend, you know, as a way to sort of propose to his wife. And she said yes, and they've been married for years and years now. And he's sort of always had this song lying around. That's it. That's exactly right, and that's the song. And so, and he showed it to us, and Leo in the band, you know, as soon as he heard that song, he said, "Wow, you know, we got to record this song, you know." Mm. And he'd never done anything with it because it was kind of obviously more of a personal song, you know, just between sort of him and his wife, and he really liked the idea. And by that stage, it was kind of 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, we'd had a bottle of whiskey, and we jumped in the studio and recorded it
at 4 a.m.
And that's what's on the album, you know. So we didn't actually re-record it. We just sort of added some strings to it and stuff. But we, yeah, it's
did you actually record it at 4 a.m.?
Yeah, 4 a.m. we'd just gone through a bottle of, we'd finished a bottle of whiskey and just kind of, you know, we were listening to this. You know, he was showing us the song, and we were already there in the studio. And we thought, hey, let's do it. Let's jump on it. Let's record it. You know, so.
Well, that's definitely going to be our final song, but I've just got a couple more questions for you, Nick. One is, I'm just doing a bit of research. You know, your brother Sebastian, who you had a band with back in Australia. I found all this stuff about Opals when I was Googling him and stuff. What's the story there?
Yeah, well, he's back living. He's been living in Australia for a few years now, and he's sort of, you know, gave the whole music thing a rest for a while, and just started getting into Opals. He goes out to the mines, goes out to what's it called out there? You know,
Pilbara or something? Oh, no, I know Cooper Pedy. No,
what is it? Anyway, it's pretty far out. Like, so he's got a 4-wheel drive. He drives out there in the middle of nowhere, and then just buys all these kind of rough, you know, these stones, all these rocks, basically, and then takes them back home. He's got the kind of, you know, turns them into opal, basically, you know, that does his thing. And he just got really, really got into that. And my dad's doing it with him as well. And they're really kind of getting stuck into this thing. And they, they've, yeah, they're making some actually some really, really nice stones. So it's just, yeah, it's really interesting.
As usual, I've got more questions, but we've run out of time. So I want to appreciate I appreciate your time, Nick. It's been nice having a chat, and don't go stir crazy. And
cheers.
We'll get another song.
Which one? Let's go with Bad News.
Bad News.
Okay, welcome back to the show. And he played Down Payment Blues on the last episode, which makes him a friend for life. It's Gary Moat from Burnout Rec. How are you, Gary? Welcome back.
Hey, Andrew. Yeah, that's a great song, isn't it? It's fun, but awesome.
It is. It's the best. It's the best. I know that, and it's timely, actually. It's a good segue because your singing gets compared to Bon Scott quite often, and I know you're a fan. I've got friends from Manchester who say we can all sing harmonies like the Bee Gees. That it's actually just part of the sort of it's in the DNA around there. The vocal cords are just built like that. Is there anything in that as far as a similarity between? I know, you know, like the guy from Rhino Bucket, George DeLivo, is not from Glasgow, but is there anything in that? Do you think that it's there's actually a sort of a geographic thing there where you can sing like that because you're from there? You know.
Well, you know, I mean, AC/DC, Bon Scott, you know, I mean, before that, you know, it was we were. listening to as a young age, bands like Thin Lizzy, Status Quo, you know, and I'm trying to remember anybody who sang, you know, in that register, but, you know, probably Robert Plant at the time was one of the highest vocalists, I suppose. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, coming from Glasgow, you know, that's where I'm from, but I don't know if it goes the way you're saying, you know, you know, areas. I don't know.
I
was brought up and listening. As soon as I went to see AC/DC and I heard Bond singing, that was it. I just, something went ping inside my brain, and I started trying to learn how to sing like that. But you remember, I was a drummer. I was just enjoying what they were doing, you know. It's like, but as a songwriter, that's where I started trying to reach, was his level, you know. And so it's been in me for many years, you know. And so I blame him for the way that I sing, obviously. It's his fault, you know.
Another thing that might be Scottish is going from a drummer to singing, because that would happen in Gunn as well, didn't it, you know? The drummer became the singer. How hard is the process, and do you ever get behind the drums at all now? Do you have drums set up at home? Do you just switch? Do you still listen to drumming particularly, or have you completely just let it go?
I would say I've let it go. I haven't actually played drums properly since 2011. I joined a covers band just up here in Northamptonshire, and we played for about 2 years. I ended up in two covers bands, and I just had that thing at that time when I just thought, I need to get out and do something just to keep myself occupied. Mainly I got drunk, you know, because that's what I was. You know, so it was a crazy period. But I gave up drumming really around about 1991 when we formed a band called Mother's Room. And so I became the frontman singer because I was writing the songs and, you know, the melodies and stuff. So we decided that rather than find someone else, it might as well do it yourself, especially as I was sounding that way anyway. So good enough, you know.
What about, don't you have friends who are drummers who think you're a traitor? You know, they kind of, I mean, drummers are kind of like, a lot of drummers are like, they're just lifers, aren't they? They're you know, they just love the drums so much. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I was definitely that way, you know. I mean, I still do. I mean, I've still got about three or four drum kits here in the house, in the loft, of course, but getting them out of the way, they take up too much room. But I never set them up and play them, you know.
Yeah,
not at all. You know, the nearest I get to that is maybe hitting them at a sound check for the band or something, just for a laugh, you know.
But yeah. It sounds like, just from reading some of your interviews, Gary, that you would have sung earlier, but the way rock was in the 80s, and you talked about an A&R guy in America in particular who was really rude, were intimidated into not singing. You know what I mean? Is that fair enough or not? Or
Well, not really. No, I don't. You know, in Heavy Tetton, you know, Amy was a singer. Mm-hmm. You know, he was the front man, as it were. You know, I mean, myself and Gordon were writing the songs. Amy was singing them, like, you know, and you know that I had no problem with that whatsoever. You know, and that, you know, people might try and say differently these days, or whatever they want to say, you know. It's just not the case, you know. I had no intention of being a singer in Heavy Tetton, you know.
Yeah.
Not at all. And I didn't want to do it then, so I was quite happy. And if we hadn't split up, then I would still be the drummer in Heavy Tetton to this day, you know.
Which brings me to my next question, Gary. Is that they're back? Heavy Tetton are back. What do you make of that?
It's good to see them, Gordon and Amy, out there doing it. They've got three new guys in the band. You know, I've not actually been to one of the gigs. We did play at Hard Rock Hell in 2019 together, but they were on at midnight and we were on about 2 in the afternoon or something.
Yeah.
So we didn't get to see each other play, but we did have a chat, myself and Hamie, and that was the first time I'd seen them since about 1989 or something.
Wow, that is a long time. Wow.
No, that is a long time. Very emotional, but there you go, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's have another song. Any song you like, if it has to be, you said I could pick one, I would pick Positive. But do you want to do Positive or not?
Oh, yeah, it's awesome.
It is a great song. It's a great song.
It's basic, simple, but very effective. is Gary Moore, and you're listening to White Line Fever.
Okay, welcome back to the program, and it's the second part of our interview with Chuck Billy from Testament. And we won't talk about his own his health again, because we've already covered that, and he's recovered, thank God, from COVID-19. But I wonder, do you, Chuck, believe that live music will come back exactly the way it was, or do you think it'll be changed forever?
Not for quite some time. I mean, I think. I mean, you never know. Metalheads maybe are a little more extreme. But I think people are going to still probably be cautious getting into a crowd, especially what I find at metal concerts. Bands have fans that travel all around the world to see them. So that's what we were talking about on tour, is like, you know, we meet fans from everywhere. How do we know where they're coming from and what they have or what they've traveled to see us? Mm. You know? And those are usually the fans that want to hang out by the bus and get an autograph, that they get in contact with you. Mm-hmm. So it's meet and greets are going to be different. The interaction with the fans are going to be different. You know, stage diving, you know, everything's just going to be different, I believe. It's not going to get back to being normal, which maybe is a good thing. You know, maybe we do, you know, be more cautious in what we do and breathe on people. I mean, for years we'd go to Japan or China or something, and a lot of people wore masks. I've always tripped on it, like, why do they wear a mask? But now I kind of get it. It's like I feel sick and don't want to spread it, you know?
So,
take something, the lead from that, you know?
Yeah. Everyone's been innovating, and you know that if you get on Facebook in the evening, your timeline is full of musicians sort of playing at home now. Which sort of innovations have you seen? Have you adopted any of them, and is there any of them that you think might stick and you might be able to monetize? Have you seen anything that you go, wow, you know, that's a good idea?
Not yet. I mean, I see the jamming, people jamming. I know Alex has been jamming with Charlie and a few people on Zoom. You know, I mean, I think that's fun, and, you know, keeps the people entertained and connected. Mm. But I don't know. I mean, it's the whole streaming world is such a new thing that, and they haven't figured out how to monetize bands fairly yet. So mm-hmm. I don't know. Hopefully, just because physical sales are going to the wayside, maybe we'll figure it out how to get bands and people paid properly through digital.
Yeah, you think that might happen? Yeah, yeah. If a band like yours can't tour the way you always have, do you have a business anymore at the moment? Like, what? How are you kind of, you know, how are you projecting?
Well, you go online. You got to go online and create new products, new T-shirt designs. You know, different things like that. You know, that's about the only way you're going to do it. You know, come up with new products. Like, we're talking, like, you know, what are we going to do? We'll sit on for the rest of the year. We've got to go new record. Well, maybe we do some cool videos or some animation stuff and make out another product that goes with this record when things let up. Mm. There's just another piece to have, a, you know, out there. And, you know, I guess it's really going to come down to that, you know, online and just really getting bands paid fairly. Mm. So, you know, without touring, people can create music and be paid fair.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Maybe a different platform for it or something. The album's obviously Titans of Creation. I hope it's not the first time I mention it, but maybe it is, and I apologize if that's the case. But how is a response different in this environment than it would be in the previous setup? Like, feedback, do you find people maybe in front of their computers a bit more? They're commenting more about things?
Yeah, anything? Definitely more comments, more people on their hands. People are locked down, and yeah, the response has been great to the record. Of course, you can't please everybody, but I think the majority of Testament fans are enjoying the record. You know, it's definitely a strong, unique record. Mm. And to me, I mean, for us, 13 records later, it still feels fresh, you know, when I hear it. It feels new to me, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, let's have another song, Chuck. What can we play?
Why don't we play, like, one of my favorites that's always been a ripper right out of the gate, is Children of the Next Level.